Hey, what's up, you guys? I'm Andrea.
And I'm Haley.
And this is Inhuman, a true crime podcast. Howdy. Sorry, that was terrible. Hi, guys.
Hi, everyone. I do have a small update in Madeleine McCann.
Okay.
That I just saw come out today. And so I just want to share that before we get into it, because last episode we shared kind of about it being... Was that last episode or a few episodes ago? Whenever it was.
I think it was shared, a couple, yeah.
About the most recent update. And there's kind of been a bigger update. So this week, on Tuesday, May 3rd, it was the 15-year anniversary of Madeleine's disappearance. And on Tuesday, the German prosecutor, Hans Christian Wolters, came out and said that, first of all, he was sure that Christian Bruckner is the person who abducted and murdered Madeleine.
Okay.
But there have been rumors that have been circulating that items belonging to Madeleine were found in Christian Bruckner's van.
Oh.
And in the interview that the prosecutor, Wolters, did, he was asked about the rumors, and he said, I can't speak on the investigation. But then he was asked, do you deny them? And he said, I don't want to deny it.
Oh my gosh.
So it definitely sounds like there's some sort of truth to that, possibly. And then he also said, we found new evidence, and it's not forensic evidence, but it's evidence pointing to Bruckner being involved.
So that would make sense.
Yeah, it's definitely compelling. Bruckner has claimed that he has an alibi because he was with a woman that night, and he was like, she'll corroborate it, but then the prosecutor was basically saying, well, he hasn't given us anything solid. Like, if he had somebody that would exonerate him, he would tell us, and he hasn't given us anything solid. So we don't think that's anything's going to come out. But we are, like, closer than ever to having answers in this case, and hopefully charges will be coming soon.
Good.
Yeah. And if this is the first episode you're listening to, we covered Madeleine McCann in episodes 37 and 38. And I am super passionate about the case because I spent, like, weeks researching it. And while doing research, it changed my mind on what I thought about the case. And I think as we've talked about it and as we did the episodes, it changed Andrea's mind a little bit, too. And we've kind of, like, evolved our thoughts on it. So it's just something we're really passionate about, and we'll continue to update. But, yeah, I just wanted to share that.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. I had no idea that was unfolding right now. So that's kind of, that's kind of cool. And I hope that a lot of that stuff that you said is definitely, like, factual, and
I know
he's going to finally pay for that. And hopefully they can, you know, he'll say where her body is, at least.
I know it seems like he right now isn't going to say anything, but if they offer him some, I don't know how it works in different countries, but maybe they'll offer him some sort of deal or something that will make him say what happened, or I don't know, but
because he's already in jail, correct?
Yeah, he's in jail right now for the 2005 rape of a woman,
right?
But I don't know how long that jail sentence is, but I know that that's kind of why they weren't in a super big rush, because he was already in jail. So
wow. Well, thanks for updating us.
Yep.
Okay, so today I'm going to be covering a case, and it does involve a child. So I just wanted to give that as, like, a general blanket statement before we get into it. But I'm going to be talking about the abduction and horrific murder of Polly Klass.
I don't think I know this one.
Okay. You probably do. You probably do. And if you saw her picture, you would definitely be like, okay, yeah,
I'm
going to
look
exactly.
it up. Because the name Polly definitely sounds familiar, and I don't know where else I would have heard that name, but I can't remember the case.
Well, I will tell you all about it. So, on October 1st, 1993, Polly Klass was having a sleepover with two of her friends, Kate McLean and Jillian Pelham, at her Petaluma, California home. The three girls were doing, you know, your typical slumber party activities. They were playing board games like Perfect Match. They joked around and laughed, and they even were practicing putting on makeup because Halloween was right around the corner, and they were excited to, like, dress up and stuff.
Yeah, that's so cute.
Yeah. It was starting to get late, so Polly's mom, Eve, came into Polly's room and suggested the girls get some rest and head off to bed. She told the girls goodnight, and Polly responded, "Goodnight, Mommy." And Eve headed back to her own bedroom where she and Polly's little sister, Annie, were sleeping for the night. And Annie and Polly are so freaking precious. There's, like, this picture of the two of them, and this, like, they are just so sweet together.
Aww.
Polly's parents were divorced, so just the three girls, ladies, resided in that home. Polly was still very close with her father, Mark Klass, and he and Eve co-parented really well together. So despite, you know, going through a divorce and all that, they still remained civil and they were able to successfully co-parent.
Okay.
The location of Polly's home wasn't in the best area. She lived close to a Greyhound bus station, which, you know, is kind of a hub for all sorts of people coming and going.
Yeah.
And her house was also across from a public park that sometimes questionable characters would hang around at.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, I don't live in California, but you do, and you might have a better idea of how Petaluma is, maybe, the area.
Honestly, but I don't know if I've ever been to Petaluma and don't really know much about it. I'm also really bad with, like, geography and stuff.
Yeah.
So, Rob might know better. He's currently taking a nap, but if he wakes up during this recording, I'll ask him. But yeah, I don't really know much about it, but there's definitely areas of California that can be, you know, questionable. Not the best.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's everywhere, definitely. And obviously, California is, like, a huge state, so I don't expect you to, like, have a, you know, precise opinion of every county or whatever, but I feel like it's kind of close to where you might live. I'm not really sure. I'm not great with geography either.
Yeah, I'm not. So I'd have to look at a map.
Yeah. So it was around 11 p.m. and before laying down to go to sleep, Polly was going to go out and get her and the other girls sleeping bags for them to sleep in, you know, because they're, like, having a sleepover. And what do? You, like, camp out on the floor. When she opened her bedroom door, there stood a large, burly, strange man hovering in the hallway of Polly's home.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't remember this, or I don't know this story, but I totally was thinking, like, you know, it was going to be, like, a, like, abduction through the window. Not that.
Yeah, he was standing. Like, that is literally, like, the shit that literal nightmares are made of. Just to open your door and there's a stranger there.
Oh my god, that's so terrifying.
Terrifying. And not only that, but her mother's bedroom was right across the hall. Literally.
Right.
Like, right across from Polly's bedroom door.
Wow.
The man had a knife, and he told the three girls that if they screamed or made any noise, that he would slit their throats. He then tied their hands with cloth and cord, which was cord from the video game that they had been playing earlier in the evening.
Oh my god. So he didn't necessarily come prepared. He had gone into the house and gotten something from inside the house to tie them up. Wow.
Yep. Yeah, I know. That's, like, scarier almost. I don't know.
Yeah, that's really creepy. And the fact that, like, nobody heard him doing that.
I know. I'm like, was your door unlocked? Like, I don't know that. You know, in any of the research I did, it never clarified if the door was open or if he, like, actually broke in.
Right.
But either way, like, he's a big dude. He's got to make some noise, you know?
Well, and he clearly was doing something in the house. It's not like he just walked in right up to her door. Like, he had to get those cords. So, oh, that's so creepy.
So it's reported in one source that I read that her mother was suffering from a migraine that evening. So she may have taken, like, some migraine medicine and was like,
okay.
Maybe not, but it was, like, right after she came into the room and told them goodnight. So it's hard for me to believe in a 30-minute period that I've taken migraine medicine. And, like, yeah, it does usually knock you out, but it's not quick usually.
Yeah.
At least from my, like, personal experience.
Unless, didn't you say it was, like, 11 p.m. or something?
Yeah.
So if she had a migraine, she could have been really tired and just fallen asleep as soon as she, like, hit the pillow.
Yeah.
You know, like, even if it wasn't the medication, because, I mean, Rob literally falls asleep in 2 seconds.
In seconds, so yeah.
It definitely could be something like that, especially if she had a migraine and, like, wasn't feeling good, and she finally got to, like, rest her eyes. So definitely a possibility.
Yeah. Obviously, she must have been asleep pretty heavily because she didn't hear anything going on, and neither did the girls, and they were awake. Okay, so he then gagged the girls and covered their heads with pillowcases. He told Kate and Jillian to count to 1,000 and then Polly would be back. The intruder asked who lived there with them, and when Polly answered, he took her and dragged her out of the home.
Polly's
friends actually thought that it was a prank at first, but then quickly realized that this was real and they were terrified. After about 20 to 30 minutes or so, the girls were still terrified, but they decided they thought it was probably safe enough to go wake up Polly's mom because Polly had not returned like the intruder had promised. They were able to free themselves from the bindings and the gags, which to me is just crazy because, like, I don't know, a grown man tying a knot.
Right. And they were able to work themselves out of it.
Yeah, exactly. It's like,
I wonder if he was kind of, like, a little bit cocky and
in a hurry or something.
Didn't fully tighten it, and they were so scared that they didn't try to get out until they knew he was gone.
Right, yeah. That could have been it, too, yeah. So they go and wake up Eve, and Eve immediately called 911 to report her daughter missing. She was, like, completely out of it when she made the call. She had no, like, when she recalled back to that moment, she was in disbelief and had just, like, you know, woken up out of a dead sleep probably.
Yeah.
And just, like, felt like in a dreamlike state almost. But she said, quote, "Apparently a man just broke into our house and took my daughter. I just woke up and there were the two girls who spent the night with my daughter. She is 12 and a half. She is not here. I didn't even hear anything. I was asleep."
Oh my God.
I know. Like, literally the stuff that nightmares are made of. The dispatcher then spoke to Kate, which is Polly's friend, who described what happened in more detail. The police then notified the FBI, and Polly was officially listed as a missing person.
Okay, so that's good, at least.
Yeah. One of the most tragic things about this case, aside from the crime itself, of course, is that when the police sent out the initial APB of Polly's disappearance over the radios, they marked it as not for media coverage, so the report did not go out to all of the surrounding counties.
Is there a reason why they marked it as not for media coverage?
They don't know. They just didn't. And it's something that they do sometimes if they need to. So the, like, news outlets don't rush to the scene or whatever and cause, you know, disruptions and stuff.
Which makes sense.
I think that's kind of, yeah, you would want that.
You would want that, and, like, it's just a house, so you could probably set up a perimeter pretty easily, and it's not like there's a crime scene with a dead body that you don't want people coming and taking pictures of, like.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah,
I don't know.
That's weird. Okay.
Yeah. Also, the man that took Polly had actually had a run-in with police the night that he took her.
Oh.
A young woman had been on her way home from work and noticed a suspicious vehicle stuck in the ditch on her employer's private driveway. She phoned the property owner, who decided to leave with her daughter, and as she drove down the long driveway, the owner passed the man. She then called 911 when she got service, or when she got to a service station, and two deputies were dispatched to her home. The deputies obviously did not know of the kidnapping or the suspect's description, you know, because of what I just said about the APB not being sent out to everyone.
Right.
But the deputies did run his driver's license and license plate number, but nothing came back as far as, like, warrants or anything.
Right.
So the deputies called for a tow truck to, you know, help him get his car out of the ditch. They did search his vehicle before the tow truck arrived, but they didn't find, like, any evidence of anyone else in the car. The only thing that he did have was an open container of beer, but since he wasn't driving when they arrived on scene, they couldn't really bust him for that. You know, you have to have like the keys in the ignition or be sitting in the vehicle or whatever.
Right.
But before he was allowed to leave, they did, you know, tell him he had to pour the beer out. They also filed a field interrogation card with his information. And then they pretty much let him go and sent him on his way.
Wow.
So this man is Richard Allen Davis, and he is the literal bacteria that grows on shit. He has a laundry list of prior charges and convictions against him, including kidnapping. But at the time, they had no idea that he had kidnapped Polly, or that Polly was even missing, and he proceeded to get away with what he had done, or so he thought.
So, when they ran the plates on him, nothing of that came up? Was it, like, not his car? Was it a fake name, or did it just not come up?
It came up that he was a felon, but they didn't even know that Polly was missing, so there would be no red flag, you know what I mean?
I guess that's true, yeah.
Because the APB didn't go out to this particular police department.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So when the investigation began, the FBI's forensic team found a palm print on Polly's bed railing. Unfortunately, a palm print is only good if you have a suspect, and they had no real leads at that time. They did assume that this was a stranger abduction, which would mean finding this person would be even more difficult. The investigators questioned Polly's neighbors. Volunteers passed out flyers. They flew a helicopter overhead to search for Polly. And they even had police dogs, you know, issued out to the area to search.
Right, like scent dogs.
Yeah. And the police department pretty much worked around the clock to try to bring Polly home safely. The actress Winona Ryder even offered up a $200,000 reward for Polly's safe return. And I guess she, you know, it's 93, so she's like big time actress at this point.
Yeah, I love Winona Ryder.
I know. She was all, I guess she's from that area or somewhere near there. So I guess she maybe like felt connected to the case.
Right.
After 2 months of searching, the police continued to come up empty handed. One day in late November, so it was like a couple months later, as I just said, I don't know why I said a couple months later. I'm very tired, sorry. The property owner where Davis got his car stuck went to inspect her property when she noticed a pair of girls' tights, a piece of cloth, and packaging tape on the ground. She immediately thought these items could be tied to Polly's case and called the police. The FBI later confirmed that the items did belong to Polly Klass. The police then were able to connect Davis and ran the palm print to his, and it was a match, of course.
Wow.
Davis was then arrested a couple of days later. After 3 days of questioning, Davis finally confessed and led police to where Polly's body was.
So he held out for 3 days.
This dude's psycho. I mean, there was like a whole bunch of stuff about his past that I just did not want to include because I like hate talking about the criminals in these cases. Yeah. But he had a really fucked up childhood. Not that that gives him any excuse or reason to do what he did. But he was just evil. He was just pure fucking evil. So
he was really trying to, like, play it off and, like, he didn't care. Of course I didn't do that, right?
Yeah. Yeah. He was just buying his time, bullshitting the police, just terrible.
Well, he probably enjoyed it, too. Like,
oh, yeah. I'm sure he did.
Watching them try to figure it out. And, yeah. Yeah. I'm surprised he confessed, honestly.
He was pretty much caught at this point. He just had to. You know, say one little thing.
But just for his ego, like, I'm surprised that he would, unless he, like, accidentally slipped up and said something.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that he would have, you know, given them what they wanted. But maybe he just had enough and he was over it.
Yeah. I mean, 3 days, that's a long time to be sitting there.
That's true, yeah.
You know?
That's true.
Because they give you breaks, but you're not leaving that place.
No. No, especially when you're a suspect like that. Yeah. Like, no.
Not at all. So Polly's body was found in a shallow grave covered in leaves and a large piece of plywood. Her body was severely decomposed as it had been 2 months, and she had been left out in the elements.
So they, like, she was killed probably that night?
Yeah. Yeah. Ugh. The nightgown she had been wearing the night she was taken was pushed up under her armpits. There were also bits of fabric and rope in her hair that had been tied into loops, indicative of death by strangulation. It appeared Polly was most likely sexually assaulted by Davis, but the doctor that performed her autopsy couldn't positively conclude that for sure, just due to the level of decomposition that had already occurred to her body. So,
okay. I mean,
but they did find, they did find semen on her clothing, on her nightgown. So okay. They're just,
something,
you know,
happened. Yeah.
Yeah. Polly loved life. She loved performing and wanted to one day become an actress. She mastered baseball, swimming, and the clarinet. She was funny and smart and outgoing. During the trial, which I'll get to more of that in a minute, Mark Class, who was Polly's father, discussed her accomplishments as well as her fears. And he said, quote, she was afraid of the dark. She was afraid of being alone, and she was afraid that a bad man would come and take her in the night. Isn't that scary?
That's so...
I mean, I know, like, a lot of 12-year-old girls probably have that fear. I know I probably did and still probably do, but...
But for her to express it enough that her dad knew that, and
yeah,
it'd be something that it wasn't just like, oh, of course she was scared of that because she was 12. It's like, that was a fear of hers.
It's like prolific or something, yeah.
That's so scary and also just so heartbreaking because, I mean, of course anybody would be scared in that situation, but it's almost like something that she's always been thinking about and it happened to her.
Yeah. So, like I mentioned, Polly was only 12 years old at the time of her abduction and death. In 1994, during a preliminary hearing, police said Davis confessed that in a drug-induced haze... He confessed to smoking pot laced with PCP and drinking heavily that night. He kidnapped Polly and drove away from her house, but that his car eventually got stuck on a remote dirt road, and he left Polly alone in a wooded area nearby. After his run-in with the sheriff deputies, they then helped him free his car and ordered him to leave the area. He claims he then returned a half hour later, surprised that Polly hadn't tried to escape. He picked her up and drove her to Cloverdale, where he allegedly strangled and murdered her.
Okay, wow.
So that's his, you know, account of the events.
Wow. So he not only, like, confessed, but he was like, okay, here's what happened.
Yeah, but they don't really 100% believe that those turn of events were actually what went down, because they think everyone, like, especially her family, thinks if he would have left her in a wooded area and drove off, she would have ran.
Oh, yeah.
Even if she was terrified.
So too. Yeah. Especially if he drove off, because it's clear, like, he left. It's not just, like, oh, he walked away, he might still be around the corner or something. Like,
yeah.
She saw him drive off, or heard him drive off, like,
yeah,
she would have tried to escape. I think so, too.
And for, like, half an hour, that's a long time to be just sitting there, you know?
Yeah.
But I mean, we'll never know, because it was only the two of them there, and he's, you know, a sick, sadistic, lying piece of shit, probably.
Yep.
After a long and turbulent trial, Davis was convicted on June 18th of 1996 of first-degree murder with four special circumstances: robbery, burglary, kidnapping, and attempted lewd act on a child. Because since they couldn't,
right,
you know,
fully confirm. Yeah.
Exactly. But they had that semen sample or whatever from her shirt or her nightgown.
So there was something that they could charge him with.
Yeah. Lewd act, definitely.
Yeah.
During the trial, Davis made quite the disruption and accusation when, during his sentencing, he claimed Polly said to him, quote, "Just don't do me like my dad." right before Davis killed her, implying that Polly's father was a child molester.
Are you fucking kidding me?
No, I am not. And Mark Class reacted by shouting, "Oh, burn in hell, Davis, fuck you," and then was escorted out of the courtroom to avoid causing further disruption.
You go, Mark Class.
And I watched, right. I watched a lot of the trial, because a lot of it's like recorded, like film recorded. I can't think of words. I'm just like saying stuff. Video of it. And it is so just fucked up, but it's like hilarious in a way too, because like he just didn't care. He was like, "You are not gonna, you know, drag my name through the mud. Like, fuck you."
Yeah.
Wow. I don't care if I'm in court or not. Yeah, it was very intense. Very intense. Okay, so he was escorted out of the courtroom. Judge Thomas C. Hastings proceeded with the formality of the death sentence, saying, "Mr. Davis, this is always a traumatic and emotional decision for a judge. You made it very easy today by your conduct."
Hell yes. I'm like fist pumping right now. I love when judges are like that.
Yeah, like, you suck, and you're the worst piece of shit on the planet, and I don't care, I'm gonna let everyone know in the most professional way. So after Davis received his guilty verdict, he immediately turned around and gave two middle fingers to the courtroom camera.
Oh my god.
Yeah, this dude is, I'm telling you, he's off his rocker big time.
That's,
I know.
Yeah, that's just, he's just trying to get the attention on him. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Although what happened to Polly is horrific, unfair, and tragic, it did help push California's Three Strikes You're Out initiative into a law just months after it occurred.
Oh, what is that?
The law mandates 25 years to life sentences for criminals who are convicted of two or more serious felonies.
Oh, that's good.
That should be, like, everywhere.
Yeah.
Like, literally the whole entire country.
Yeah.
Or world, I guess. According to the Washington Post, Polly's murder also led to widespread criticism of state law enforcement authorities for their failure to effectively monitor paroled inmates.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
The state legislature has since funded a program to alert police officers when they stop someone about that person's parole or probation status, which I personally think is chef's kiss, honestly.
Me too.
Because, like, I know people can be rehabilitated, and I know, like, not always once a criminal, always a criminal, but, like, for these violent crimes of, like, rape and child molestation, stuff like that, where these people somehow slip through the cracks. Yeah, exactly. There needs to be, like, a big-ass red flag that pops up, because, like, obviously, they're in trouble if you're running their stuff anyway. You know, their ID or their tags or whatever.
And, I mean, it sucks for those that are fully rehabilitated and, like, actually are on the right track. But, you know, you commit a crime.
You still committed a crime. Exactly.
Yeah. Even if you're rehabilitated, like, you made that choice and you have to deal with the consequences. Even if it's just, you know, there's a flag on your name. Like, sorry, but
you did it.
That's what you get, yeah.
You did it to yourself. Yeah, exactly. So Polly's murder also helped change the APB and the CHP practices. So if you don't know, an APB is an all-points bulletin, which is a radio message sent out to officers on the police force giving details about a criminal at large. And the CHP is the California Highway Patrol.
Yep.
The radio system was upgraded, and such bulletins are now broadcast on all police channels through a centralized 911 dispatch system. So it's going everywhere.
Good.
Another amazing thing that came from this case is the Class Kids Foundation, started by Mark Class, Polly's father, and it was in her honor. He is now an advocate for children and has made himself available to parents of kidnapped children. They offer a slew of services for parents of missing kids, like they'll help you print posters, they'll help find you, like, therapy, like, all kinds of stuff.
Wow, that's amazing.
He knows what it feels like to be in that situation, and, like, no one should ever have to go through that, but, you know, now he has this site that helps people. So
yeah,
I will link the website in the show notes if you'd like to donate or volunteer. In 2019, which this is a little controversial, so, you know, whatever. But I'm going to talk about it anyway. In 2019, Governor Newsom, the governor of California, halted all executions, and Mark Class went to the media and he was disgusted. He said, quote, there's a very good chance Polly's killer will live longer than me because he benefits from something that I don't benefit, and that's guaranteed health care.
Wow.
Yeah. And that Governor Newsom works on the side of evil. He stated he was viscerally angry and wanted for the last thing for Davis to see is his eyes staring at him, just like the last thing Polly ever saw were his eyes as he was squeezing the life out of her.
Oh, that breaks my heart.
Like, her dad said that. That's gut-wrenching.
Wow. Yeah, I'm not gonna say anything about, like, I mean, we don't really share our opinion on the death penalty because I think there's a lot of controversy out there and I don't think it's necessary, and I'm not going to say anything about Newsom because, again, controversy, and honestly, I don't really follow that side of things, but that just breaks my heart that her poor dad, like, had to go through all of this again.
Yeah, that's rough. I mean, I don't think there's a one-size-fits-all, like you said. It's a personal opinion of what, you know, people think. And, like, for me, it's not a consistent opinion, so I really don't even, like you said, want to even speak on it. But
yeah,
I totally, 1,000% understand her father's frustration because he was already convicted. He was already tried. He was already convicted and sentenced. And, like, for someone else to come in and change that, like, that doesn't seem right at all.
I agree. Just nothing.
So before we wrap up today's episode, I do want to play an audio clip from Polly's grandfather, who is Joe Class, which is Mark's father, obviously. They did like a press conference type thing after the trial, and I was watching like a little mini documentary, I guess you could say, and what he said literally gave me chills. And it was pretty powerful, so we're going to include that right here, and I hope you guys enjoy.
This man has spent his entire time in jail trying to think up another way to inflict terrible pain because he is a continual, endless sadist. And there are other sadists in this country who will believe him, but they too are sadists. As far as this man is concerned, I wouldn't wipe him off my shoe. I'd burn the shoes and flush the ashes down the sewer, and I still wouldn't get down to where he is.
What rang through the family when he said those terrible things about Mark?
My wife became hysterical because this man succeeded in what he was trying to do, which was pierce my son through the heart and pierce the rest of the family. It was just plain despicable, and it shows the kind of people child molesters are.
Mr. Class, the judge did hand down the ultimate sentence. Does that in any way make any of this easier for you?
No, but it's putting Davis where he belongs. It doesn't make it any easier.
Joe, did you ever think the family's suffering and pain could get any worse?
I wondered what he was going to do. He's done everything he can do now. Oh, he'll think up other things. He'll probably get married, like the Trailside Strangler. God knows, when is this going to come to an end? Probably not in my lifetime.
Joe, do you think it was worth it for Mark to lunge at him?
I don't think Mark had a clear thought in his head at that moment. It was a natural reaction. Any father on earth that wouldn't lunge like that is not a good father. and an accusation by a filthy pig like him.
Mark had indicated that he wants to go see the execution. What are your thoughts on that?
I'm sure he wants to see it now.
What about you?
No, I have no desire to see the execution.
Joey, talking part about praying and about forgiveness. Is there even any remote problem to pray for him?
I don't have to pray for him anymore. I said my last prayer today. I thought I said it after the second verdict of the jury when they recommended the death penalty. But then I felt uncomfortable in there today, and I thought I'd better do it one more time.
What was your prayer?
My prayer is, God, grant us the serenity to accept the things we cannot change, the courage to change the things we can, and the wisdom to know the difference. God, take charge of both of us and make us feel like doing what you want us to do.
What did Lorena say to you?
She apologized, and she too was hysterical. She apologized and wanted me to tell the family that she had absolutely no clue he was going to pull a despicable stunt like that.
Davis made an apology, but he made it a very pointed apology to certain members of the Klass family. What's the point of that? Why were there certain members of the Klass family?
He obviously was about to make a filthy, lying accusation against my son. And to lie about Polly's last words, that was just unforgivable.
Thank you, Mr. Klass.
Sure.
He's just, like, so passionate about his granddaughter. I mean, you know, she got freaking murdered and, like, this piece of shit. Okay. So, that is going to wrap up the just horrifically tragic case of Polly Klass. Like, she was such a light and was taken from this earth way too soon, and she did not deserve at all what happened to her. Her family did not deserve that. And I really hope that this piece of shit gets what he deserves.
Me too. I think that there's a special place in hell for him.
There absolutely is. There absolutely is. But I will post the pictures so you can be pissed off like I was of him, like, flipping off the camera and all of the things. I might even post a little video clip of him saying what he said to invoke anger.
Yeah.
I'm not going to include it in the podcast just because I don't want it to be about him. But and then, of course, I will post pictures of Polly's beautiful face and her sister.
Yeah,
and
I looked up a picture. She's so cute.
I know. And I just, like, my heart honestly goes out to her mom and dad and just what they've been through. And from what I understand, like, her mom wants to kind of remain out of the spotlight.
Okay.
Which is totally respectful. I can get behind that too, 110%. But she is, I guess, on the board for the foundation that her dad created.
Oh,
so she
amazing.
Does have, you know, more behind the scenes, I guess.
Right.
But her dad is, you know, they're all doing amazing things. And my, like I said, my heart goes out to them. My prayers go out to them because no parent should ever have to suffer through something like this.
Yeah.
But I want to thank you guys so much for listening. And until next time, keep it human.
Did you just totally forget what we say?
I was going to say keep it weird.
That's your YouTube channel.
But that's not what we say. That's not what we say.
No. All right, guys. Well, keep it human as much as you can. We'll see you next time.
Get some rest, Andrea. Bye.
Bye.